United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explores podcast. I'm the host for this episode, Don Redman, and with me today is Carla Christopher. Several months ago, Carla and I had a conversation about how to have difficult conversations, especially around race, gender, and sexuality. Today, we're going to break it down even a little more and talk about words. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers, Carla.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you could maybe give us just a brief introduction to yourself and the work that you've done around difficult conversations.
Sure. I'm actually the co-director of Towards Racial Justice, which is racial justice and also social justice work for Lower Susquehanna Synod. So it's been a real incredible opportunity to speak with pastors, lay people, other rostered leaders around how we can be more inclusive and authentically welcoming, and also how we can educate members of our communities, both faith-based and otherwise, who may not be aware of how to roll out that red carpet of Christian welcome. And a lot of that has come into use as the director of my county's Pride, which we call Equality Fest. So doing a lot of that work in school districts and corporate settings, nonprofits, I'm just realizing that across the board, the basic vocabulary has changed so much in the last decade that whatever setting you're in, it really helps just to know how to have the conversation in a way that keeps the doors open.
So when we spoke earlier, we spoke about, again, this idea of having difficult conversations and conversations that we may not be comfortable with. And one of the things we touched on was the use of words, and very particular words within these conversations that have very special meanings in different communities or in different settings. So I thought today we would talk a little bit more about words, especially those words surrounding gender identity and sexuality. And because language is ever changing, we should probably make the disclaimer that this is being recorded in 2019. And so if you listen to this a few years from now, you may want to make sure that what we're talking about here actually matches with the way the words are being used currently or even tomorrow. So I thought we would maybe start with kind of some broader definitions to give us a framework for the conversation, and specifically around these ideas of gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, and then maybe how a person's gender at birth plays into these different ideas. So I think we'll just start with the first one, and can you give us an idea of what gender identity means?
Sure. So gender identity is the gender that you identify with. That's who you feel and believe that you are inside, spiritually, mentally. It may not match up with how you're gendered physically or what has shown up on your birth certificate, but your gender identity is something that you feel inside. And that can be male, it can be female, but there are also lots of folks who increasingly don't feel like gender is a system that only has two possibilities. So we've seen new gender words increasing in usage, such as bigender, someone who feels that they might be male one day and more female identified another day, or pangendered. That means all the genders encompassed. So there are folks who feel like there's not just two genders, which is very much true from other societies, that there's been as many as five genders in plenty of countries in Africa, Southeast Asia, and South America. So pangender makes space for even more than two. There's lots of different names based on cultures, and it's really not appropriate to use those words unless you are a member of that culture. So, for example, two-spirit is a phrase that we hear a lot talking about gender, which is someone who may have both male and female tendencies and identities, but because it is a uniquely spiritual Indigenous Native American people term, that's not something that would be appropriate for someone who was not of Native American descent to use. So we would use the term bigender for that.
Okay. What about the idea of gender expression?
Now, gender expression is how you express yourself on the outside, and that has a lot to do with societal expectations. So, for example, someone who is gender expressing in a more masculine way may very much identify as a female and be gendered as a female, but she just happens to love dressing in boys' clothes, have a short haircut. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with her gender. We used to call that tomboyish when I was little. But it means that her gender expression may be more masculine. And same with men who might identify as a male and be gendered as a male, but maybe they love having longer flowing hair or wearing bright colors or even dresses or nail polish or a bit of makeup. And those people might be considered more feminine presenting.
Okay. And now one that maybe not, is a little more concrete. What about sexual orientation?
So if gender is all about who you are in yourself and your body, sexual orientation is about who you are with others and how you relate to others. So some of the words we're more familiar with are straight, who are people that are attracted to an opposite gender. But there's also folks who might be lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and a lot of sexual orientation words are also new. So people that are attracted to a spirit of an individual or their personality rather than their gender, those people might be considered pansexual. So pansexual attraction means that you are attracted to the individual, and it could be any gender. There's also the more familiar bisexual, and there's a lot of growing awareness around ace and arrow folks, which are under the umbrellas of asexuality. So asexual folks who don't experience sexual desire, and aromantic folks who don't experience sexual or romantic desire. They prefer deeply intimate friendships and connections that don't happen on the romantic spectrum. So those folks are finding new ways to define what relationships and connection look like.
Okay. And so, as we've talked about these three, at no point have we really got into the idea of, I guess, what we would call gender at birth, or your birth sex, which is not also not binary. We tend to think of it as either male or female, but medically, there are people that are born along a spectrum in there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So, what gender someone is assigned at birth is mostly the terminology that we would use now.
Okay.
Because most trans folks do believe that they are born with their identity intact. And it just might take some time to realize it or for it to become clear. But we are assigned a gender at birth that's put on our birth certificate. And it's generally male or female. Now, fun fact, that folks who are born intersex with both male and female organs, or male and female genitalia, or male and female chromosomal makeup. So whereas females would be an XX chromosome and males would be XY, there's lots of different shifts that can make someone born with XXY or other permutations that create ambiguous genitalia or dual genitalia. And that's as common as being born with red hair. So if you've known somebody with red hair, you've known someone who most likely is intersexed and biologically is not just male or just female.
And my understanding is that there are, I believe, 16 different variants in that range.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a medical condition. But there's also folks that might achieve that through some sort of accident or some kind of issue that may arise after their birth. There's also the fact that some folks don't necessarily feel tied to an assigned gender because it's just not clear at birth. And we have actually genetically modified children, given them surgeries that they didn't ask for, that maybe even their parents didn't ask for, to try and make them fit into this is what gender looks like. And that has caused a lot of pain and medical issues. So that's a reason it's really important to know about, that there are a lot of folks who experience real pain, physical injury, not to mention emotional struggle when they get older. And it's not until then that they're able to go back to a doctor and find out that someone tried to fix them as if they were broken, when they weren't broken at all. They were just different.
Right. And I think, you know, as we look at this combination that we've just been talking about here, I mean, you could have somebody who was physically born in all appearances and genetically as a male, who has a gender expression that feels that they express as female, but they maybe they, well, or let's say their identity, they identify as a female, but they like to express as a male, and maybe they have a pansexual orientation where they're drawn to more, again, as you said, the spirit versus the sexuality of the person. So there's a lot of complexity in here.
Definitely gets complicated. Right. There's been a lot of assumption over the years that if you were a female, you were going to express yourself as a female. And that maybe if you were a female who expressed yourself in a more masculine way, that meant that you were gay or bisexual. And that's not necessarily the case. So we're really learning about expressing gender and sexual orientation and our gender expression as separate things. Who you are and who you're romantically or sexually attracted to, they're not necessarily related. There's plenty of trans folks who are also gay, or straight or bi or pan. There's just no rules once you realize there's not only two ways to be.
Right. Okay, well, let's move on then and talk about some particular words. And we'll actually start with the abbreviation, the big one, which I believe is currently LGBTQIA+.
Is that correct? Definitely the most commonly used. Okay. There's even a few more letters in there at this point. But anything from LGBTQ, LGBTQA, or LGBTQIA are all things that you'll find in scholarship, in public writings, in recent publications. So they would all be considered acceptable. The most inclusive one would be LGBTQIA+, that you see in common and frequent usage. So that would be L for lesbian.
Okay.
Which would be a woman who is attracted to other women, gay being a man who is attracted to other men, bisexual, which would be an individual who is attracted to two different genders. Now, we used to understand that as someone who was attracted to both men and women, but now that we realize that there's more than two genders, someone who is bisexual could technically be attracted to, for example, trans men and folks who were assigned male at birth. So it's just two different genders. Okay. So it leaves a little bit more space.
Now, I'll interrupt here, and that sounds like maybe a definition that has changed over time then.
It very much has. Okay. You are so right to say that these letters, these understandings evolve. For example, the next letter, the T, used to just mean transgender. And that meant someone who was assigned one gender at birth, who then goes through a surgical or hormonal process, usually, to change into the opposing gender. So a male became female, or a female who changed and began living as a male. We now look at trans as an umbrella term. So there's lots of identities underneath the transgender umbrella. So, for example, there's a lot of folks who might identify as trans who never transition. It's considered really bad form, incidentally, to ask someone, well, what surgeries have you had? Or what hormones are you taking? That's just not the kind of question that really is anyone's business, especially because there's so many other things that affect whether a person is able to transition. If you have heart issues or medical issues, you may not be able to take hormones, so it just may not be something that's medically possible. And it's also something that's deeply contextual about how much money you have and what access to medical care you have. If it's only the people that can afford to transition who are allowed to, is it really fair to stigmatize or devalue or invalidate folks who have the same commitment in their heart, but they just don't have the same resources in their wallet? So it's not about whether or not someone has had surgery or started taking hormone shots. It's about how do you identify inside. And so under the trans umbrella, we do have folks who consider themselves transgender or folks who consider themselves agender, as in not having any gender at all, or bigender or pangender, having two or more genders at the same time.
Okay. Q.
Now, Q has also evolved. Q can stand for questioning for folks who are still discerning what exactly it is that is their truest form of expression, and also recognizing that those understandings may change over time. We no longer look at gender or sexual orientation as something that once you have made a decision or realized who you are, you're never allowed to change that. That's just not the case. As our understanding continues to grow, so do people's understandings of themselves. So questioning may be a place you leave and come back to it multiple times in your life.
Okay.
And it also stands for queer. And queer can be a tricky word because it was an insult for many generations, one of the worst. Well, it's now being reclaimed. And so a lot of folks who are on the rainbow spectrum really appreciate having a word that kind of captures their multiple identities. So for example, if you do have a gender expression, and a gender identity, all of which that are different, and you don't want to have to go into all that detail, it's nice to be able to just say, I identify as queer. So that means ask, don't assume. It means I may be a little different than what you might be expecting. So make sure you get to know me before you figure out who you think I'm going to be partnered to or what kind of language would be appropriate to use around me. But it is a word that even some folks who are LGBTQI+ are not comfortable with because they do remember it being a slur word or a derogatory word. So it's really better to use queer with caution, especially if you are not a member of the LGBTQIA community. Ask someone first how they prefer to be addressed, and then go with what they tell you.
So context is very important and the individual as much as the meaning of the word. So.
Absolutely.
I.
So I is intersexed, and that's what we had talked about just a few minutes ago. Someone who has the genetic markers or genetic appearance of more than one gender. Somewhere in between.
All right. A.
A is another one that has multiple meanings or words assigned to it. So A can be asexual. It can also be agender. It can also be aromantic. So there's a few different A's, but all of them relate to someone who sees themselves totally outside of a spectrum. That really reject the binary idea that there's an either or an or. The A leaves space to be completely outside of that system.
Okay, and I'm gonna reach here and say that the plus is for everything else that has yet to be covered in this abbreviation.
So. Exactly. So for example, in some of the most recent, very scholarly articles, you might see 2S included with the acronym. That being for our indigenous siblings who are Two-Spirit. Because a lot of those words are not used in general conversation, they're frequently not included in a casual article or casual spoken conversation. But the plus is just a reminder that all of these concepts are ever fluid and ever changing. We're constantly adding as we learn more about people. I mean, we really didn't know for centuries that people being born with different genders at the same time was a real medical thing. So it's an important reminder, I think, to say, hey, this is something that's going to keep evolving.
All right. Okay, well, we got through that. So I wanted to see if there were any other common terms that we should be aware of. And I'll throw one out to start with, which is cisgender.
One of my faves. Straight is just so 2000s. And we can't forget that when we're talking about giving everyone a space to be named, that we should give that same thought to each individual. So someone who is cisgender, to give it the most raw term, it's the opposite of transgender. Cisgender person is someone who identifies with the gender they were assigned at birth. So if you feel like a man and the doctor took a look at you on the day you were born and said, well, I think that's a man as well, everyone's in agreement and you get to be a cisgender male. That term kind of developed as a reaction because we had real men and trans men. And that felt invalidating to trans men. So now we say there's trans men and there's cisgender men. It puts everyone on a more equal footing, and it's a good reminder that there's no such thing as one type of real man with everything else being sort of an extra or an anomaly. It's just that there's different ways that people achieve their manhood or fully realize their manhood.
Okay. Are there any other terms that you would think are important for our audience to understand so when they hear them in conversation or read them in the press, they know what's being discussed?
I think it's important to remember that a lot of these terms do have nicknames. So, for example, you won't necessarily hear the full word transgender. You'll hear trans. You may not hear asexual or aromantic. You'll hear ace or aro. All of those things, pan or bi, do have a real history that's attached to them and do have a full word. If there's something that you're not sure of, it's almost always okay to ask. But really, if you can remember your rainbow acronym and if you can remember cisgender, you're doing pretty good.
Okay. Are there terms that should be avoided being thrown around casually or used in a colloquial terms? You were just talking about how there's some abbreviations, trans for transgender. Is that always going to be appropriate, or would there be times when maybe even shortening it might not be appropriate for someone?
Sure. So the shortening, the abbreviating, the full-length words is almost always going to be appropriate. But there are a lot of older terms that have fallen out of common usage. So we've talked about how queer can be a challenging word because some folks really are still very triggered by it, having had it used as an insult against them. So that's one that's not one to lead off with. One word that not a lot of folks are aware of is fallen out of common usage is homosexual. It's just a particularly clinical term and was really used as an umbrella term for something that isn't an umbrella reality. So we just don't hear the phrase homosexual anymore. Usually if someone's using it, it means they haven't read anything that was written in the last decade or two. So it can often be a triggering or a challenging word for folks.
Does that have more to do with when it was treated as a mental disorder diagnosis? Is that the connection that makes it less favorable at this point? Or
that's absolutely part of it. Mm-hmm. It was not usually a word that was life-giving or affirming when someone's homosexual identity was being discussed. obviously, any words that have been used derogatorily, there's still folks that those are incredibly painful or hurtful for. So even if you hear someone else using those words jokingly, it's generally best not to go down that path. If that's not your personal identity and you're not personally reclaiming it, it's best just to leave that one alone.
So basically, if you haven't heard the word in this discussion we've had yet today, best not to use it until you know. So.
Exactly.
Okay. Any other words that you can think of, or does that give us a good framework, do you think?
I think that's a great framework to get started. Okay. Again, we remember that it's always changing.
Sure. And again, it's best to interact with the people that you're talking to and learn from them and what's appropriate. And even in regions of the country, there may be different usages and ways the words are used, I would assume. So.
Absolutely. Some of the things that have just been used historically that may not have been meant as an insult, but they've just fallen out of use because they were often used in a derogatory way or a way where we were talking about someone, not to them. So there are some phrases like cross-dresser. There's so many individuals who may have been trans that were labeled cross-dressers and had their identity stripped from them or lumped in with a straight man who might be cisgender and just happens to enjoy feminine presenting now and then. So some of those catch-all terms like that, we avoid those as well.
Okay. The last thing I thought we would talk about today is the use of pronouns. And something that, especially in the educational world, I think we see more and more is people specifying in their email footers the pronouns that they go by. Maybe he, she, she, her, hers, they, them. So could you maybe kind of explain the importance of that for people?
Sure. So I definitely have Carla, she, her, hers on my email signature. Traditional male pronouns would be he, him, his. And for those that are non-binary, which is another great word, just a catch-all term or an umbrella term for someone who doesn't identify as male or female. They may identify using the plural they, them, theirs as a singular word. So they, them, theirs would be their pronoun. There's also some others such as ze, zim, ziz, which is based off the German pronoun Z, which is gender neutral. That's more popular in some other areas of the United States. Not so much in South Central Pennsylvania, but you might hear that on some of the coasts or some areas of the Pacific Northwest. There are other acronyms that are based in different languages that have gender neutral pronouns, but those are definitely the most common. Pronouns matter because it's a really easy way to let folks know that, hey, if you're not just what we have expected conventionally, that that's okay, and that we're not going to make assumptions about you. Now, if you are cisgender and you're very comfortable being addressed as he, him, his, and people assume that you're a man when they look at you, you're not going to care. You're not really bothered if someone says he, him, or his to you. But if you are someone who is trans or non-binary and someone calls you by the wrong gender, that can be super hurtful and invalidating. And if you're looking for a safe space, if you see someone that talks about their pronouns and specifies their pronouns or uses them in introductions at group activities, that goes a long way to letting you know this space is committed to getting to know an individual rather than making assumptions based on what they look like. So it's free and it doesn't hurt anyone, but for a trans person, for a non-binary person, it can make all the difference in helping them feel comfortable in a space. It takes some getting used to. When I go around a circle, when I'm in a group and I say, please introduce yourself and say your name, where you're from, and your preferred pronouns, I get lots of blank looks still, It's definitely still something that folks are practicing. But I think the more we can do it and the more we can normalize it and just get people used to, hey, even if every single person in this room is cisgender and identifies with the gender that they were given at birth, we need to remember that not everyone does. It's the same as keeping an eye open for folks that may have some mobility issues, moving tables far enough apart that if someone with a walker or a wheelchair wants to get through, it's a way of remembering that children might need a booster seat or to come through with a different vocabulary or a different set of materials. If someone has been speaking in a different language than English, and they speak English as a second language, do we have translators? Not to say that there's anything wrong or inherently less than about any of these people, but we do live in an America that isn't really set up for those that are different. So if we can do any small thing to let people know, hey, you might feel a little bit more welcome, you might feel a little more warmth, you might experience a little more love in this space, if I can let you know that you're seen and that your opinion matters, your desires matter, your feelings matter, then you're much more likely to stay. And across the board, if a trans person gets to name their pronouns instead of being what we would call misgendered, it goes so far into helping these folks feel that they really are included and wanted in the space.
Well, thank you. I really want to thank you again for coming in and sharing your knowledge with us and giving us a framework that we can go out and have these conversations with people and feel like that, feel comfortable about what we don't know, and be willing to maybe reach out a little bit more and have a conversation with somebody that may be difficult, but giving us enough background that maybe it's not that difficult. So thank you so much. You have been listening to The Seminary Explores. Our guest today is Carla Christopher, a poet, an activist, a seminary student, and as I like to say, so much more. Thank you for joining us today.
It's been wonderful.
And we hope to speak to you again.
Absolutely.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.